I made the choice to come back because I want to know that when I die, I've made a positive impact in the world and my whole life changed.
Welcome to Owning Your Legacy. I'm your host, Laurette Rondonet. This podcast is about exploring just what it means to own your legacy. Through intimate conversations, we explore how to bravely tap into purpose, leadership, and becoming visible. My hope is that we inspire you to realize your own potential. Go after your dreams and boldly leave your mark. It all begins with bravely owning your legacy. Welcome, Lori, to Owning Your Legacy.
Thank you for having me.
And if you would take a minute to introduce yourself for our listeners, that would be great.
I'm Lori Hilson-Turumsky. I'm the president of Essential Water Technologies and HC Strategic Advisors. And I'm also an award-winning author of a book called You Hold the Power, Igniting Your Fire for Success.
I think that we should, for our listeners, share how we know each other and how long we've known each other. So you share that.
So I got a call to join an advisory group because I was going through some challenges as a second generation family owned business.
As we do.
Said, you've got to meet Laurette. And so I went to lunch with you and with Pam, and I was hooked from that day forward. And so we've been part of this group for what, 20 years?
I like 20 years, which is insane. And so it's called SAGE. And I was so happy to have another woman because I was the only woman on the board, but in our mentoring group at that time. And then the craziness is, so I'm Laurette now, but also Lori grew up as Lori. So we were the two Loris, which was hysterical. And our lives like mirrored each other throughout those 20 years in insane ways. But we'll get into that a little later. Before we get into
it, is crazy.
That might be even behind the
and
scenes.
And you are a client of mine.
Yes, exactly.
In the industry, so that was really super cool too.
But before we get into all of that, I would love you to share your story and how you got here and a little bit about what trials and tribulations and, you know, how you came to be Lori Hilson.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with the story of when I was a really young girl sitting at the dinner table, and my dad comes back from work and he's like, Lori, he goes, how do you like the dinner that you're eating tonight? And it was hot dogs and baked beans. I'm like, okay, this is great, Dad, but why are you asking me this question? And I'm the oldest child out of, I have two sisters and a brother, and the brother wasn't born yet. And he said, I'm going to take a really big risk. I'm going to start a business for myself, and you're going to have to make sacrifices. Now, you and I are both really tall girls.
Yes, we are.
I was 10 years old, and I was terrified thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not going to be able to get pants that fit me.
So, it's the most important thing.
Right? So I'm like, Dad, you go. I'll do this. And the very next day, I took my Barbies, dolls, whatever, to the road with a lemonade stand, tried to sell my stuff.
So you're selling the Barbies and lemonade at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
You're so entrepreneurial.
Oh, yeah. I had a little wagon next
it's
to
like
that.
It's like a lemonade stand plus.
Not selling too much lemonade. Not selling too many of the old toys. So I went knocking door to door around the neighborhood. Can I feed your, you know, cats? Can I water your plants? What can I do to make money so that I could have something for myself at a very young age? So I go to school. Fast forward. I'm going to Loyola University, getting a business degree, and my dad calls me and says, Lori, I know you're going to be graduating in a year, and would you consider coming to work for the T.H. Hilson Company? And I'm like, wow, Dad, that's amazing, but I have no clue what you do. It was never that I was trained to come into the business. I really didn't know what my dad did.
He didn't talk about it at the dinner table?
He never really talked about it much. I just knew that he was going on trips, and he was traveling, and things were going well. And so I thought about it. I learned about it. And I said, Dad, you need me? I'll come. So I graduated and I started at the T.H. Hilson Company in the bottom with sales and learned some things on the inside and went to my very first training session. And never really thought anything about me being the only woman in a room full of 50 men learning about the different products that we were selling.
Did you notice it when you walked in the room, or did it not faze you?
It didn't faze me.
Okay.
Because I always just did. You know, I always just was driven, and whatever circumstance was faced, I just kind of went along with it. And I didn't realize it until a man pulled me aside at a break And he says, Lori, come here. He said, look around you. You don't belong here. Wow. You're daddy's little girl. You're just a pretty face. You just need to go home. And I write about it in the book.
Uh-huh.
Because I know at that very moment, I gave him my power.
Yes.
I went in myself. I felt like a minority. I felt like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? And I just was really quiet. I continued on with the conference. And I thought about it, and I thought about it, you know, as I'm continuing my work. And then I got really, really mad.
Yeah, rightfully so.
So angry. Like, if he can do it, I can do it. If they can do it, I can do it too. Mm-hmm. So I thank him to this day. Because being a leader in the chemical industry, as a woman, that conversation really helped me to be able to be the best that I can be. And that's owning your power, mm-hmm. really overcoming, letting your light shine.
Right. Challenged you to be the best you can be. I love this. And I had a similar situation at Edlong where one of my dad's friends that was doing some training for us said the comment in front of the entire staff, appointed versus anointed, meaning me. And I literally cried. Like, I went home and cried. Told my and I remember telling my dad about it, and he was pissed. But I think that this daddy's girl thing and this imposter syndrome could fall into this category. I'd love you to describe, like, when you felt worthy for the president role and the role that you had. Like, it was, did a light switch ever go off where you felt like, I'm not daddy's little girl and I'm not just a pretty face. I am worthy of president of this company.
That's a really great question. So my career path was sales and then sales manager. And my father had a lifetime dream to make a certain sales dollar, right? Come on, Lori, you're the sales manager. You need to grow this business. And we kept hovering, you know, a couple million here and a couple million there, and couldn't really get over it. And so I just started writing a business plan at home on weekends, at night, with raising children.
I remember
children.
You reviewing remember those with the Sage Group. I vividly remember that. Yes.
Changed our incentive plan, looked at our market space, looked at synergies, kind of really revamped a lot of the products that we were bringing to the marketplace. And it wasn't until one of our suppliers came in and wanted to talk about, they did an evaluation on all their distributors and asked to see our business plan. And that conversation, which was supposed to be maybe an hour, went for 4 hours. I shared the whole thing. Wow. It's our number one supplier. And from that point on, you know, listen, when I was, and you, when we were rising up in the industry, being very few women in the industry, I would sometimes sign my dad's name to certain things. And some of the suppliers are like, this is not your dad. This is you own your power. Again, right? But when the supplier looked at that business plan and looked at the growth that we were going to be accomplishing, which we did and we surpassed, that's when I knew. I'm on the right path. I'm driven for it. You know, I love growing businesses. I love looking at synergies. I love looking at that window that's just a little bit cracked and seeing what you can do to open it, to grow.
I love when you talk about in the book, and we'll definitely talk more and more about your book, but I did read it and it was really good. But I loved, and you kind of touched on it, but the story of your dad's vision of where you guys could get to and then and where you saw. Talk about that a little bit.
So at that time, before I became president and the sales manager, we had our 25th year anniversary, and he had a goal to be, you know, this multi-million dollar company at the time. And because I wrote the business plan and we followed that plan and things that we had done, we grew to almost that. And we're at our anniversary dinner and I'm like, hey, Dad, we made it, right? And he's like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I said, well, let's go double it now.
He must have been so proud of you, Lori. I mean, the fact that you hit his dream number and had the confidence, let's double it, Dad.
Let's double
it. That's so fun.
This is fine. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
So yeah, we did. We did. And we had lots of challenges along the way. One was the downturn of the industry. I don't know if you want me to share a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was hard for lots of tears in our Sage meetings around 08, 09 for pretty much everybody around that table, but
the phones.
You and I would cry easily.
Stopped.
It was horrible.
Ringing.
Horrible.
For everybody in Sage. I mean, it's incredible.
And the interesting thing, just kind of talk about Sage for a second, is we have architect, financial planner, wealth management guy.
Oral surgeon.
But the way auto dealer, and the way that we could see what was happening in the economy before other people because of that group.
Yeah.
Because architects and like, it hits housing first. Like, I felt like we really had a preview of, so we all could prepare for it quicker than a lot of other people, I think.
And some who rised up at one point and the others were struggling, we all rose up together.
We all did. We could go on and on about that. But yeah, so 08, 09 was hard for all of us. And talk a little bit about what you guys did during that.
So I, was growing quite fast and went into a marketplace that wasn't core to my business. Millions of dollars in this uncore segment. And we got turned upside down with this product line. So I demarketed from the product line with the help of the Sage Group, right?
And I think you should describe, and I know what you mean, but upside down, which...
In the negative,
losing money.
Income from that product line because the prices plummeted and we
bought inventory at high, got you.
And had all this inventory.
And we had to sell low for a loss. It's never fun.
So we demarketed from it. And I was told, just trust, you're going to be more profitable at the end of this. And all of a sudden, the phone stopped ringing and the whole industry was down completely. Like, I think the industry was down about 40% throughout the end of this end of 08 and through 09. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh, what did I just do? Yeah. Right. But it was the right decision because we did come out of this more profitable at the end, just like our advisors told us would happen. But it's scary living that moment. And as a distributor, a lot of our suppliers were on forced furloughs where they had to, you know, take vacation days and unpaid days. And I had all of my salespeople out there in front of customers. We had our inside customer service team calling all of the purchasing agents. I wanted communication. So we talk about reinventing ourselves, sharing what we're doing with our suppliers more than we ever did before, looking at ways to grow the business, being out there, being visible. We were able to obtain other product lines as their sales force. And so I was able to show, you know, a whole presentation to our banking community. This is what's in the pipeline.
Yeah.
Now, I also had all expenses cut to the bone and asked every single salesperson, employee, management team, and owners to take a 5% pay cut.
Wow.
We had to terminate a few people. But I said, and I don't want to cut anybody else. This is my A team. So can we all do this together? Everybody said, yes, we can. And we stopped matching our 401k as well. Mm-hmm. And we were out there invisible, you know, in front of customers.
Right.
And
where other people were probably, you know, pulling back, you were almost more doubling down on the relationships.
Yes. So that when they're ready, we're here. Mm-hmm. And we were able to pick up some other suppliers throughout that process. Mm-hmm. So this was in March where we took the pay cut for everybody. Then through the fall, I was able to reinstate everybody's salary because of what had happened during those 6 months. And then in the spring of the following year, I paid back to everybody what they gave up.
Wow.
So the loyalty that I had for the employees.
Huge.
And the way that we reinvented ourselves was now standard practice. Mm-hmm. And we were able to really grow the business from that point on.
I love that. And that we're all in this together concept, and they believed in you too, you know? So they're like, we're going to stick by you and help you get through this, which is beautiful. So then kind of fast forward to, you continue to grow and grow and grow. And then the decision that you had to make and how you came to that decision.
Which decision?
The one where I'll never forget the call when you called me and I was like, you're what? Do you remember that? So the decision to sell the business.
That's what I thought. You know, timing is everything. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of mergers and acquisitions taking place in the industry. And you either grow big or you go home.
Right.
So we were trying, and we had acquired a couple of smaller businesses and really wanted to do a great job within the Midwest. But a lot of our suppliers were looking for more national coverage and things like that. So I had several people come and want to acquire us, and just wasn't the right fit, wasn't the right culture, wasn't the right timing for a couple of years. And then I got a phone call that you've got to listen to this one, you know, this one company. I know you've got a family business and you're young. I have a little, you know, baby.
Right.
Home. She, you know, so I'm not ready to retire. And just the opportunity.
And how old was Grace then? She was.
So we actually sold in 2016. So she's going to be 16 years old now. So
yeah.
She's like 8, 9.
Yeah, pretty
old,
young.
Right. And it was a tremendous opportunity. A great fit, a great culture. I learned a lot. I was able to be on the executive team for that for that company and acquire other businesses and have a nationwide footprint. So it was tremendous.
And talk about that in terms of a decision for a family, because I think, you know, there's a lot of listeners that might, you know, be a part of or of a family business. That how did you guys all, because there was many people that had say in this decision. I was, of course, your dad, your mom, your sister. How did you all come to the same conclusion? Was that hard or was it not too hard?
It wasn't too hard. My dad said to me and, you know, the other stockholders, but Lori, if you feel that this is right, then you come to me with it. And
that's
pretty
beautiful.
Much it was, I mean, a tribute to my dad,
right?
He had the courage to turn the business over to a second generation and let me just thrive and grow. And my brother and my sister were involved. And I have another sister who's a silent stockholder, but not in the business. So together, it was the right decision and easy because it was right. I think that's
right,
part of
right
it.
Time. Do you feel like your dad did let you run it autonomously? Was there any times like that he would step in, or maybe when did he let you just fly? Was it after?
Well, I think that's a really, it's an interesting question because it evolved from the sales manager, you know, the stories that I've kind of shared. And he was always there. So I would say, Dad, this is what I'm going to do. What do you think? And we would talk about it, discuss it. And he, you know, would we change it or we'd go for it. Mm-hmm. We'd adapt. So I always had him. And it's different. You didn't have that luxury.
Right.
So
that's a really valid, you know, that's so true. And I underestimated how hard it was to not have the buck stops here guy behind me. I'm like, he's gone. Now it's me. Like that.
Can't imagine.
Very
I mean,
hard.
The Sage Group has been so critical for me with that because the people in the room are a lot larger. You know, we all come from different spaces and can share and collaborate with each other from a different space.
Mm-hmm.
So that has always helped me to really be able to grow and drive the business further. But always having my dad there to rely things on.
Yeah.
It was always
that's good though.
Good.
I mean, that sounds like a great way to have a partnership. I want you to touch on one of the topics in your book or one of the chapters in your book was about know the numbers. Because I think even talking about those rough patches that we've all gone through, how important that is, and I think you have some wise words of wisdom for listeners on know your numbers.
It's so important. And that during that downturn when I demarketed and, you know, when Warren's saying you don't do this because you're going to be more profitable. It's knowing your numbers. It's knowing what is the nut that you need to cover for the month.
Break even.
What is your break even? What is your EBITDA, right? What are the things that are going to help drive the business? Cash flow.
Yeah.
Cash flow is king. You know,
and cash flow
is so
tricky. I mean, I think that sounds so simple, but describe cash flow a little deeper for people of what they really should be looking at.
You have to have enough cash to pay your expenses, right? So that's easy part. And if you have a line of credit with the bank, they're going to look at your cash flow. Now, during that downturn, when the industry was down, our cash flow was good. You know, our cash flow was good.
And because you weren't buying inventory as much,
well,
maybe.
Well, it just... because you have money in reserves, you know what, how much you need for each month. The stockholders weren't taking a lot of the money out. We're keeping the money in the business. There's a lot of things that you can do to preserve your cash.
Right.
God willing, right?
Right.
But having the banker tell me your cash flow is good, I'm not worried about you, when other businesses are going under because they don't have the cash flow, it's a survival. Mm-hmm. So knowing your numbers, knowing, you know, when I was looking at how many people do I need to, you know, unfortunately let go of to be able to keep the rest of my team in place, and how, what percentage do I need to cut from everybody's payroll to be able to make that? We were looking at the numbers all the time.
I went through that first when my dad called me in like 95, when I just got to Ed Long, and best, I always say it was like the best learning of my life, because we were in exactly the same place, almost bankrupt, never officially bankrupt, but that break even number to me is the most important one. That's what I learned then. Like, the whole entire company knew what our revenue needed to be a month to break even. And having everybody going for that number was kind of fun. And there's parts of this hard stuff that it really is, look, at least looking back, maybe not living through it, was it fun? But then you tap into it. Then we went through it again in 08 and 09. Now my dad's gone. So it's like learned in the past and tapped into it in the future, which that's what
I've
really...
I've been there. I've done that. I can do this again.
I can do this again. Yeah, and I think, that was big stuff. So I want to kind of switch gears a little bit and, again, back to your book and talk about that catalyst moment.
Catalytic
moment in your life that really propelled you in a different direction.
Yeah, and catalytic is, right, a term that we use in the chemical industry, and it's
the catalyst that
secures everything.
Uh-huh. Makes the next
change
happen. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So my catalytic moment is the birth of my youngest daughter, Grace. So we have a lot of similarities.
Yeah, we were
both
pregnant at the same time, going, oh my God, didn't think I was going to have another, or either did you?
with a second marriage and a blended family.
Yes, blended family. Yeah, lots of those moments. So yes, I remember that.
So I am pregnant as an older mom. The next oldest sibling is 14, mm-hmm. 16, 18, 21.
Yeah.
And... going along fine. I had, you know, two very easy deliveries with my first two girls. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of, you know, very arrogant and saying, you know, what time are we going to be done here? Because they wanted to induce me, you know, because I
got work to do.
I'm like, yeah, we're going to have this baby in 4 hours, right? Well, that didn't happen. And I have my sister, Lisa, who is never able to have children. I said she wanted to come be there with me during the delivery. And I said, sure. And talked to my husband, Hewer, and he said, that's great. She can be there. So we're there. Nothing's happening. And I had an epidural for the first time and never had one before. And I got this tremendous pain underneath my rib cage. So the epidural wasn't easing the pain. And my baby's in distress. She's, you know, they're watching her, monitoring her. Going to sleep on my left side is what they have you do. And then all of a sudden they check me, and total distress.
Wow.
There's like blood everywhere. Mm. And it's I'm in shock, and I'm literally now I'm shaking. I'm almost convulsing on the bed. I don't know what's happening. My mind is clear, my body, and I'm embarrassed because I can't control my body.
Aww.
So at one point before that happened, they wanted to maybe move the epidural, which is really important, because the nurse that was there said, don't move the epidural, because let me just see if I can work it. If they would have moved the epidural, they wouldn't have been able to do an emergency C-section.
Really?
So they kept the epidural where it needed to be. So I know God was in the room with
us. And maybe she foresaw that might be coming.
Could be.
Maybe.
Could be. At that time, just the baby was distressed and everything. So emergency, you know, we're whisked into a room, and it's very, very cold. I don't know if you had have you ever had a C-section?
No, I had my babies at home, remember?
Oh, crazy. I forgot. That's very cool, yeah.
Except the last one, but yeah. Yeah, so never had an epidural.
Me neither.
I was scared of the shot in my back,
well,
frankly.
I didn't like that either, but thank God I had it.
Yeah,
for me this time. So they're doing the C-section. I call them whatever medicine they gave me. And my arms, I don't know if anybody in the audience have ever had one, but
yes,
your arms are kind of like this, and you're on this metal bed, and my head is like on the bed. And
sounds horrible.
My baby is there, but she's purple from the neck down, and she's not crying. And I'm holding on to my sister's hand here. Yeah. And my husband gave me the sign of the cross, but he was like waiting. So I'm just praying to our Father that my baby's going to be okay. We knew her name was Grace. So, you know, praying that she's going to cry. And there's like five hits. And finally she cries. So now we're bawling. And I say to my sister while I'm holding her hand, I go, my head is so heavy. My head is so heavy. I can't lift it. She goes, it's okay, Lori. Gracie's good. You can rest now. And then that's when she saw my eyes go back in the flat line on the machine.
Wow.
And I mean, like 20 doctors came rushing in. But I went and I finally wrote about it. It took me 16 years.
I love that you wrote about this.
To write about this story and what I saw when I went over there. And I'll just share a little because I want you to maybe read the book. But I want you to know that it was probably the most loving, warmest place I've ever been in my entire life.
It's beautiful.
And I saw Hubert's, my husband's mom and dad, who had passed, my grandma, my grandpa, and my grandpa that were all passed. Only my grandma was still alive. And they're floating like this and beautiful and no glasses and like maybe 45-ish looking.
Interesting. Me. Yeah.
And then
just their bodies, right? So no
just
legs.
Just their bodies. And then behind them was this most beautiful amber, loving room of light and warmth. And I like to share that story. And I actually read this chapter to Grace. I said, Grace, can I share this? And she said, yes, Mom.
Oh.
You can. And I had Lisa read it because she was there with me to make sure that I'm telling everything, you know, the way that it happened from her side. But I share it to give comfort knowing that people of, you know, faith, that there's such a beautiful, warm,
yeah,
comforting place.
And of course, there's so many stories. My, you know, my brother-in-law, Paula's husband, had gone through that heart attack short around the same time because Christopher was a baby, and tells a very similar story, Lori, except his was on a fishing boat with my dad.
Wow.
And just loved it. And really even, and I want to know if you felt this way, but came to the conclusion he was sad to be back. Like after everything calmed down and he was good, you know what I mean? Like he said he almost went through like a little depression of longed to be back there in the fishing boat, so to speak. Did you ever feel that way?
The love and warmth that I felt, it's hard to replicate.
Yes.
That. I don't know how to describe it. It's light. It's light, like you're a part of this flame.
Source.
And I made the choice to come back because I want to know that when I die, I've made a positive impact in the world. Mm-hmm. And my whole life changed when I came back. I mean, seriously, you just go through this, like it was like a white, light silver, like your shoes, kind of brightness and cold.
I love that.
Mushing back, right? So your shoes are like mushing me back. But I did talk about it with my sister or anybody. And the doctor was the one that said at my checkup, we almost lost you. You know, we almost lost you.
So your sister didn't bring it up to you? Was she scared?
We were at Christmas together. So Grace was born in October. Went to my two-month checkup to make sure I could take the baby to Florida. My sister came with. And we talked about it at dinner afterwards. And the doctor said
so it. So your sister knew, but she didn't tell you for 2 months.
Right.
That's
right.
A lot to hold.
Right. And she's so happy I'm talking about it now,
that's
too.
Good. She probably didn't want to scare you with a newborn and just...
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a lot.
So purposefully now remembering, and I can remember today exactly what I did 16 years ago, that dream,
yes,
that vision, that, you know, what monumental event in my life.
And how does Grace feel about it? I think that's interesting that you asked Grace if you could share, and like, does she, I wonder how that feels to her. Like,
I would love to ask her.
Very special. You know what I mean?
Like, we're always kind of bonded.
Yeah.
I think because of that, it's just a... It's just
like she was meant to be here. You were meant to be here. There's something to that, I believe.
Right. But I'll tell you what it did for me. My husband's very philanthropic. Mm-hmm. He always has been. He's running huge organizations and gives from his heart, gives back to so and helping so many people. And it's kind of new. It was new for me, right? I didn't really mm-hmm. understand this whole world. And I then sought out and looked for how can I become part of a board of directors to give back and help people, especially women and children are my real heart, you know, to help people, especially working women, to be self-sufficient, you know, the working poor. So I found my first board of directors with the emergency fund. They kind of found me and I joined that. And then I started a nonprofit that you're part of.
That I love.
But I really, really want to make an impact. And part of that is writing this book. I mean, there's been almost several hundred copies I'm, you know, giving out and selling and things just to help people to be the best that they can be, right? And teach them if you want to be part of a cause, you know, there's ways that you can go about it.
Totally. And it's like an offering of yourself to help others. And I think that's beautiful. Talk a little more about Female Strong and what got you to found it and... just the idea behind it and a little more on that.
And that's part of. And you're part of that, but you were also part of.
You dragged me into totally honest.
I did. But I'll
among many other things.
I'll tell you what was so amazing. So I was the president of the National. Before I was the president of the National Association of Women Business Owners.
Also known as NABO.
Yes, NABO. So I'm going to call it NABO. I was getting involved in their organization. And I really wanted to help the next generation of young girls, right? And they had asked us to do a job shadow day. And I said, okay, I'm out. I said, I brought my daughters to, you know, come to your mother for work day. And they hated it because I made them do filing and nothing. Very excited to show them the industry. And I love that they put me out of my comfort zone. And Melissa did that. She said, Laura, you've got to do this. Every member of this committee has to do a job shadow day. And the mayor of the city of Chicago wants these Chicago City kids to see what a female business leader looks like.
That's beautiful. I love hearing that the mayor was behind that.
Totally behind that. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh. All right. If I can't take them to see my business because I'm a distributor and it's kind of
boring. I'll take them to see Lorette's business.
I'm going to take them to see a really cool business. And I said, Lorette? What did I do? I called you and I said, can you take...
And I said, hell yeah, I love it. I love it. A bus full. It was a bus full.
Well, we went from one to a bus because we couldn't get a train to your
so we
place.
Needed a bus. So let's just bring a bus full of the kids. We don't need
can we do
one.
30, can we do 33? So the Chicago Public School System gave me 33 of the bright engineers, chemistry majors, biology majors, all these really smart high school kids. And we did that. That tasting.
Yeah, it was very hands-on. Yes, I love. And we really, my kids, opposite of yours, used to love coming to bring your kid to work day.
Well, you have a cool
place
to go.
Because we do have a cool, fun place where you can do a lot of tasting and really open up their eyes to all the different aspects of the food industry, quite frankly. It's not, you know, there's science, but then there's marketing. It is very cool. So that was really, I remember that vividly. That was a really fun day. And it lit up my employees too. My employees, and it's not the last time we've done those kind of things, but they just love teaching these kids all the opportunities that lay before them. Very
well,
cool.
We took a video. So I've got a video on my website still.
When I was researching and reading your book, I stumbled on that. And it was, I think it's on YouTube still or something.
Yeah.
Somewhere, So it is evergreen, Lori. We will...
So that's
legacy
started,
stuff, huh?
You know, with the young girls, right? And being part now, I'm not the president, I'm past president of NABO. And I'm thinking, okay, I did the emergency fund to help keep women and children in their homes. So, what can I do to really help a lot? You know, and I love entrepreneurship. So, looking at how do I help these entrepreneurs or how do I help young girls to have confidence to become an entrepreneur? Mm-hmm. That really is, it evolved from our day to walking away from an annual meeting at NABO, sitting on the train, and, you know, coming up with this idea. And at the time, it was the Spirit Foundation of NABO.
Right.
And then really wasn't part of NABO, so we renamed it to Female Strong. But Female Strong helps that middle school and high school girls. You know, the confidence level.
Those stats, Lori, you got to rattle them off if you know them off the top of your head. I don't know them off the top of my head, but that sixth grade, like, absolute lose all confidence thing happens, and it's...
Right.
I'm so curious why it happens, but it's for real.
Well, when I was asked to speak at Bennett Academy, which is a math and science academy for all their mothers and their daughters, the mothers could give lots of questions of what to say. These high school girls are super smart, but they don't want to be smart. They don't think they're going to get boyfriends.
Isn't that sad?
And it's so sad.
It's so sad.
It's so sad. So they said, please talk that up, that you can be smart and you can be in the chemical industry and you can, you know, have a full life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that confidence, really, that gain anything we can do to help keep the confidence of these young girls as they grow into young leaders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what Female Strong is all about.
Yeah.
And I knew you would love it because of what we did together.
I love it.
And trying to really
and watching the girls go from like class one to their Shark Tank moment and how they grow in that confidence and grow. They're out there, you know, speaking in front of all these investor panels like it's nothing. It's and listening to the parents say, wow,
yeah,
my kid is shining. So.
Well, and it's impactful because we're helping an underprivileged community. Mm-hmm. And I think what really makes me and you tear up when we are watching these Shark Tank and we're the judges giving money, actual money, for these young girls to start whatever business that they're it's changed their life.
Yes.
And they've all been able to change their community because mm-hmm. every single business plan has a component of philanthropic.
Naturally.
On their own.
Yeah,
not
on their
by
own.
Us,
we, yes, exactly.
Which
always.
Is incredible to me.
And the ones that win and end up going to national and it's the first time they and their mom have ever been on an airplane. Like, wow.
Yeah.
And there's some great stories that have come out of that and some of the graduates and what they're doing. It's. You feel proud to be a part of it. So it's
what you don't know the chain reaction that you're creating mm-hmm. by allowing someone to have that opportunity and then their community.
Yeah.
It's hopeful, right?
It's very hopeful. So back to your book. Tell our listeners how long it took you to write it and and what really got you off the mark and say, I'm going to do it. Like what did that?
Well, 10 years.
10 years, which, yeah.
10 years because I started it. Because my nanny that I had babysit Grace said, Lori, when she, you know, Grace was taking a nap and she said, you really need to share your stories of how you went door to door at a young age, trying to make money for yourself, make a change of your own circumstance. Because the kids today, they just sit on their phones.
Yeah.
They just accept what's handed to them. I see it with my daughters. They were older and in mm-hmm. the junior high age bracket. And she's like, can you please share it? People need to know that you can make a difference. You can make a change. You can change your circumstance if you try. So I started writing it. It was very personal. Even though I have a lot of personal stories, I have a lot of business stories in the book.
Yes.
But
and it's a perfect length, Lori. Like I love that you can get it done in like 2 days.
It's 108. Yeah. Pages, only 8 chapters, very short and condensed.
But great. I mean, that's just perfect.
So it evolved. And 10 years ago, I didn't have the lessons that are in there today. Know your numbers, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And I was also asked to speak a lot in different colleges, universities, you know, women's groups. So a lot of those things are in the book now, you know, leveraging your assets. I'm speaking next Friday with the City of Chicago and NABO on what is certification right for you? What do you do when you have it? How can you leverage that? So all those things are in the book now. Mm-hmm. And I had already been introduced to the publisher who takes only women and inspirational stories, who I want to introduce you to.
So my book's only 2 years in the making. I got 8 years to go.
Yeah, we're going to not wait that long. Well, in the meantime, selling the business and having this really high-powered job, and then now coming back to my consulting.
Time, right? Having time. And you told me your time to write, which I get, was like in the evening, like you're like, it, you felt like it just flowed out of you when you had the time.
When, 10 years
ago. I do
love
writing, but it's finding time to get the quiet.
So it just comes to you. Mm-hmm. You Hold the Power has always been the title. Always, for 10 years. I always knew that that was, and that's for me, encouragement, confidence. You hold the power to be the best that you can be. It's your choice, right?
And I want to dig deeper on the word power because I love that. I love the title of the book. I think I was telling you this. I'm not sure, but we did this exercise at our annual meeting. So we do traction with Bobby, mm-hmm. you know, and she beats the shit out of us for like 3 days once a year. Like, sorry, annual get together. And one of the exercises she had us do as a leadership team was we had to write, you know, I admire most in you, blank, and I would admire you more if. And one of my leaders that might be in the room here wrote, I would admire you more if you would claim your power.
Really?
Isn't that deep? And I can't tell you how many times my Taekwondo instructor that I did with the boys when they were little, so when Garrett and Gavin were, when we just moved to Batavia after my divorce, literally yellow pages and picked this Taekwondo thing to do with them. Amazing. But beyond that, he'd always be like, where's your power? Like he would yell at me. He yelled at me all the time. But the master would be like, say that. And horseback riding. I'm nowhere near a horseback rider like you are, but I did take lessons, you know, around by my house. And she would yell at me too. Of you got to have, you know, where's your power? Like that you got to control the horse, which I'm sure right. you know very well because you are a great horseback rider. So, and those kind of crazy contexts that I'm describing, because I obviously struggle with owning my power. Sometimes when people say that, I'm like, well, what do you even mean? Like, what does it look like me owning my power? And I hear so self-confidence and I heard what you said, but I think even more like, okay, easy to say that, but how do we really do it?
For me, so you see the light in the hands. It's a female hands, right?
Yes.
For me, it's letting your light shine. You know, it's not like, oh, I have power and I'm going to be bulldozer. That's
right.
not what I'm talking about.
Obviously not, yes.
The power that I'm talking about is that light within you. It's a, can, you know, be a little spark.
It can be like the white shoes.
It can be your white shoes.
It's the source that you were talking about, Lori.
It is. That is the power. That is the, I attribute it to your flame. Let your light shine. Let your light shine. Don't diminish yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hide from your power. I have hidden. I've been in lots of situations where I've
let you and me both,
my
sister.
Power be robbed.
Yes.
My light goes
I
out.
I kind of vaguely remember sitting in a pool. Where were we?
Oh, we
Baltimore?
Were. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that was probably one of my lower times, for sure. But
so that's what I
we've
mean.
We've all been there. I think mm-hmm. every single one of us has let somebody else take our light, take our power, and it's not a one and done lesson, I don't think either.
Mm-mm.
Takes a few times.
And over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because people will try to put that light out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you can just, it's more of, it's still the confidence thing as well that you can.
What do you think about even being aware that your light's going out? Have you ever had a situation where you're like, you didn't even know it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It just happens. And then you're like, whoa.
What just happened? Yep.
You think back on it, and then you're like, you have to regain it. You have to find that flame again.
Yeah.
So that you can let your light shine.
Fire in the belly. I think this book is your fire in the belly, for sure, which I love. And congratulations on an award. Tell me the award name again.
It's the International Literary Award from the Professional Woman Network.
I mean, that's amazing. Your first book.
I fell off my chair.
It was just like, that's crazy. Oh, I'm just going to write this book and oh, I'm just going to win an award.
Well, no, so first time at this conference where my book was being launched from the Women's Network, the Professional Women's Network. And Linda Ellis Eastman is the publisher. And so there's about 100 amazing women in the room, all doctorants and have like 5, 6, 7 books. I'm like the little pauper here with my only little book.
I'm a first timer.
And we have the dinner and it's time to, you know, give the awards. And she said, this woman I've never met, but I got to know her from all of our weekly publishing, you know, conference calls. And it's well deserved. And I'm like, no way am I thinking it's me at all. And she called my name. I mean, I have won other business awards. You've won many business awards. You kind of know what you did to get there.
Yeah.
This was like my being really vulnerable. And with you, I'm being really vulnerable.
Yeah.
The audience right now, sharing my intimate stories. I got an award for that. Are you kidding me? I was like,
but that's what people
and shaking want. And I was crying. I mean, it was very, I don't know, unbelievable.
That is very cool. It reminds me of one of those stories, and I don't want to give the entire book away, but when you, and I think we're going to talk about it a little later, but when you, for the pageant, and your mom was talking, and you were like, "Mom, I don't want to do it. I'm scared. I'm not doing this." And your mom just kind of,
I buckled beautifully, my knees, and I was like, "No, I'm not. Don't, please. I don't want to be this." And the principal of the school nominated me, and I was a sophomore. I was only 15 to be, you know, at a Miss Teen Illinois pageant, and I'm like, "Oh, Mom, no." And you have to have some talent, so I'm. Draw, I painted, and
I didn't even know you painted. That was there was definitely some cute little things I learned about you when reading this book. I'm like, I didn't know that.
But it's overcoming your fear because from that I had to speak in front of I was 15 in front of like 500 people, and now I'm speaking on cranes and I mean all over the place.
You're doing great with that. You always have, and then you push me into it, and I'm like, Lori, I hate speaking.
And look at you now.
This is easy.
Look at you.
Okay, I think we will. Go on to our last question.
Okay.
Which you know what that might be, but I would really like to know the legacy that you would like to leave behind.
I've kind of throughout this whole interview with you kind of shared it.
Yeah.
You
definitely.
Know? It's empowering people to let their light shine, to own their power so they can be the best that they can be. That's my legacy. That's why I came back. I want to make an impact, a positive impact, to help others to not be afraid and to fulfill their dreams as much as they can.
So, Lori, can you tell our listeners where they can find your book?
Absolutely. So it is on Amazon, but you have to search it, You Hold the Power, Igniting Your Fire for Success. Because if you just put in You Hold the Power, it won't show up for some reason. And you can also go to my consulting and speaking website, which is hcstrategicadvisor.com. I have it all available there as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining me.
It's been
wonderful. Great conversation. And I hope everybody enjoys your book. And I can't wait to see it on, you know, number one bestseller on some list, because I'm sure it will be.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Owning Your Legacy. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with others and rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about me and how I am owning my legacy, you can find me on Instagram at Lorette Rondinet and online at loretterondinet.com. Until next time.